beautiful people. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I am your guest host, Sansara Taylor. On today's show, we'll be sharing segments from the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on YouTube. But before we get into that, I have incredible, exciting, tremendous news. Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader, the author and architect of a whole new framework for human emancipation, what we call the New Communism, is out now on social media. At Bob Avakian Official on all the platforms, he's bringing his voice and world-class leadership to the public square, telling people the truth they need to hear and fighting for revolution. And he is straight up at this historic time, putting himself forward because he is a leader who can lead us through this crazy morass and intensifying nightmare and crisis of this system to wrench out a real revolution, true emancipation for all of humanity. So don't miss this. If you're on TikTok, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, all the social media platforms, look for at Bob Avakian Official, and you can find him bringing you the truth, hard-hitting, not watered down, the truth you need regularly. Don't miss it. The other thing I want to highlight for you is that the full RNL Revolution Nothing Less show is available at youtube.com/therevcoms. And on that channel, you can find the full, complete, historic 3-part series interview that I did with Bob Avakian together with my co-host there, Andy Z. We interviewed Bob Avakian extensively. He spoke about his life. He opened up his heart, his history, his personal development, but also his political development. He explored the lessons and formative experience that he draws from working closely with the Black Panther Party in their most revolutionary days. He gets into how he went from being a patriotic American, thankful that he was born in what he believed was this greatest of all countries, to somebody who has become an ardent critic of this country and everything it stands for and everything it does in the world down to today, and the most fiercest advocate for an actual revolution and fighter for this revolution to bring about a world without everything America stands for and true emancipation for all of humanity. He gets into the strategy for this revolution. He gets into the future society, what it needs to look like. He gets into all the things that are holding people back, from those who are catching the hardest hell at the bottom of this society to the students on the campuses with the woke lunacy that's taking hold, but also reaching people's highest aspirations for a radically different world. He does all of this and more, gets into the poetic spirit, gets into all of this, but he is hardcore for a real revolution. And there is nothing like this journey, like these interviews. So I recommend you go to youtube.com/therevcoms. You can also find them at the website revcom.us, where you will find hundreds of articles, audio, other clips about this revolution and from this revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. There are very few people in the public square or not in the public square who would say that these are normal times, or times even close to normal, whatever that has meant. But very few realize that this is one of those rare times when revolution is more possible. And for the sake of humanity and the planet, we need to seize this moment. So the resources I just gave you are indispensable in the situation we are in. So with that, let's begin with the opening commentary from the Revolution Nothing Less show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I'm here with Annie Day.
Hello, Sansara. Welcome to the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which is about what our name says, making an actual revolution to overthrow this whole system of capitalism and imperialism and bring a radically different world into being. We base ourselves on the leadership and the revolutionary vision and scientific breakthroughs brought forward by Bob Avakian. And if you want to get a sense of what this vision is about, watch this.
What if there were no more one part of society exploiting the others, and those exploited had no choice but to enrich them in order to be able to live themselves, working their whole life away under conditions of this ruthless exploitation? What if we didn't have to live in a lopsided world where a small number and a small number of countries have accumulate tremendous wealth by exploiting the great majority, and the conditions of the great majority are desperate? Look at the world. Look at the phenomenon of Ebola. There's been a lot of concern about Ebola. Rightly so, but way too much hysterical fear about whether a few people here might get Ebola, and not nearly enough concern about what is happening to the people in Africa. What if there were no more wars for domination and plunder? What if there were whole different relations among people, valuing each other's humanity? What if there were different relations to the environment, protecting it and providing for future generations instead of despoiling and ruining it? What if we could have a whole different outlook on life and on the future instead of one of dread and one of desperately striving just to make it? Now, to paraphrase John Lennon's song, Imagine, you may say I'm a dreamer, but this is not just a dream. It is something for which there is a definite basis in reality, and it is up to us, together with people throughout the world, to make it a reality.
That was Bob Avakian from a dialogue that he did with Cornel West in 2014 called Revolution and Religion, The Fight for Emancipation and the Role of Religion. And you can watch the whole thing on YouTube. It's very powerful. In that, he referenced Ebola. And Ebola was a disease at the time in 2014 that was ravaging Africa, spreading like wildfire. And there was a tremendous amount of media freakout and societal freakout that one or two cases were going to spread here in the U.S. And as he talks about there, completely ignoring the impact this was having on thousands and thousands, the masses of people in Africa. And there you see the depth of the American chauvinism that he's critiquing and fighting for people to imagine a world beyond.
The internationalism that is really at the foundation of Bob Avakian's work, his new communism and the revolution that we're fighting for, the fact that American lives do not matter more than other people's lives. You know, also in this excerpt that we played, BA talks about, imagine if people had a different outlook on the future and on life instead of one of dread. And he said that in 2014, and I think that's even more the case. The feeling of dread that people have about the future is even more the case today. And it is so urgent that we lift people's sights. Everybody watching, that you lift your sights and that you be part of working with us to spread a vision of a different way we could be living. We have, and this is going to frame our show, it frames a lot of the work the RevComs are doing and that we want to invite you into now. This proclamation, we need... and we demand a whole new way to live, a fundamentally different system. And you can find it at revcom.us or at Revolution Books if you're in the cities that have them. And it lays out a vision of a different way we could be living. It's based on, it's a distillation of what's in the Constitution, actually, that Bob Avakian wrote for the new Socialist Republic in North America. After we make a revolution, we intend to institute this form of rule in replacing the U.S. Constitution, which really is an exploiter's and a slave owner's vision of freedom. And what this will make possible is gone into in this proclamation right in the middle. And it lays out in very popular way six major points from the Constitution for the new Socialist Republic in North America. And it starts with a whole different dimension of rights of the people, a whole different sense of freedom, and completely the opposite of how we live today, where the police, law enforcement, media, the government apparatus comes down on people. It contains people. It terrorizes them, brutalizes them, and suppresses their desire for change. You look at this, how many people are begging and protesting and two even set themselves on fire demanding a stop to the genocide in Gaza. And yet the U.S. is going forward, both parties barreling ahead. You don't have the right to determine the direction of society. In the new Socialist Republic and with this revolution, people have the most fundamental right of all, which is to come together and determine the direction of society, to debate it out and to forge the ways together to go forward, to end all exploitation and oppression in every form. That's a different dimension of freedom that you can never exercise under this system. This constitution and the new socialist republic, the new economy that it brings into being, the new relations it brings into being, will move to end wars, nuclear weapons, and the basis for wars in the world. It will construct a system of healthcare that's not an industry based on profit, but is actually oriented to meeting people's healthcare needs. Education that actually educates people, a whole society oriented to overcoming inequality and oppression, white supremacy, male supremacy, xenophobia against immigrants, the violent assault and bigotry against LGBTQ people, a society oriented to uprooting all of this as we go forward together with people all over the world to end exploitation and oppression everywhere. It's a radically different vision.
And I think the difference it'll make for people to really dig into and spread this is huge. You know, we're at a time right now, coming very soon, where the whole direction of society could come up for grabs in the clash between the rulers of this system, the MAGA fascists on the one hand, the mainstream genocidal war criminal imperialists, and in the, you know, coming to a head very likely by the 2024 elections, if not sooner, where in which through that clash, and I want to repeat this phrase, the whole direction of society could come up for grabs. And in that situation, is there going to be a force that is actually demanding and making real and fighting to make palpable the fact that we really could live a whole different way? This proclamation opens with this demand that the U.S. Constitution and the system that enforces it be abolished and dismantled and replaced by the Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America. That is a mass demand that could very quickly become a demand of millions in a situation where there is no other way out in the interests of humanity. So then in that situation, this proclamation being on the walls, being on lawn signs in people's homes, being dug into and fought for, and yes, really having people's sights raised to, you know, a few weeks ago, you gave a talk at UCLA and you made a point that really stuck with me, which is true. But, you know, we've been talking to hundreds of students, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of students. And we've heard a lot of questions, a lot of differences, a lot of debate about revolution, about all kinds of questions. But not once did we hear a student put forward a positive vision, you know, with differences with what we're fighting for, but a positive vision of how society could be organized. It is nowhere. It is absent. And so people are seeing the, you know, the horror in Gaza that's enforced by a system. They're seeing the situation now in Haiti, a hellscape of human suffering. They're seeing just, you know, madness and suffering and hate it and angry about it and agonized about it, but they do not have a vision for a different way that humanity could actually live. And that has to be fought for right now through a lot of struggle, raising people's sights that this is not permanent, the horrors of this system. It is not necessary. And it really could be done away with. And again, the time for that is coming soon.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize that when you talk about this clash between the rulers, and it's going to intensify going into the 2024 elections, if not sooner, we're talking not about just a more intense, relatively normal election fight within the bounds of the elections. We're talking about things breaking out of those bounds of normal, including all the way to potential armed clashes among the rulers, among sections of their enforcers, and possibly even civil war in this country. And whatever shape it takes, it's not going to be normal. And this is where, when the direction of society comes up for grabs, there needs to be millions raising this demand, led by thousands who we're out to organize now. And that's the mission we're calling you into on this show and with the work we're doing. So later in the show, we've been talking about the Constitution that Bob Avakian wrote. Later in the show, we're going to show a portion of the interview that we did with him here on this channel, where he gets into why we asked him, why did you write this Constitution? And he tells us, and he tells us what he was thinking about when he wrote it, what problems and contradictions he was trying to solve. Is very deep. It's going to be the heart of our show. At the end of the show, we're going to bring you a few highlights from International Women's Day. The RevComs were out in the streets around the country. But first, we're going to go to Raymond Latta, who is spearheading a fight to take on one of the biggest obstacles standing in the way of people even being able to think about and imagine the future we're talking about and engage the new communism that Bob Avakian has brought forward in an honest way, which is taking on the anti-communist brainwash. So we'll go to that interview right now. Raymond Lada is an advocate for the new communism that has been forged by Bob Avakian, and he is a political economist in that context. He is also the spokesperson for Revolution Books in Harlem, New York City. Raymond, welcome to the Revolution Nothing Less show.
Well, it's great to be here, Sansar.
Wonderful to have you back. Now, you have been spearheading a campaign to spread the new communist revolution that we need up against the anti-communist brainwash you are getting. And you're taking this to campuses, you're taking it broadly, but especially in campuses, academia, where a lot of the anti-communist brainwash is concentrated and churned out of. And this campaign recently took you to Yale University, right into the classroom of Timothy Snyder, where you declared no class as usual. And you did something that got a lot of attention. It got covered in the Yale Daily newspaper, in Inside Higher Ed, other publications. Why don't you tell us, first of all, who is Timothy Snyder and why did you march into his classroom? What went down?
Yeah. So on February 29th, we, the RevComs, marched into the class that's taught by Timothy Snyder entitled Hitler, Stalin, and Us. And we declared, as you mentioned, no class as usual.
No class as usual today. There is a state of emergency, a state of emergency caused by this capitalist imperialist system. Genocide in Gaza, women stripped of the right to abortion, climate catastrophe. And the way out of this is a liberating communist revolution based on the new communism by Bob Avakian. And Timothy Snyder, your professor, is locking you into this oppressive system. He is prettifying U.S. imperialism. He is brainwashing you with lies and slanders about communism. His anti-communism is as scientific. No, I am not leaving. The stakes could not be higher. We have challenged you to debate.
So why Timothy Snyder? Because this guy is a highly promoted historian, an anti-communist historian who has been given all kinds of platforms through publication in the New York Times, in the Washington Post, at international policy forums, at MSNBC. And he spreads the message that communism is a failure, that communism is a nightmare, and it must not be repeated. And this has an incredibly toxic and poisonous effect, you know, on the atmosphere in the university among progressive and enlightened intellectuals, because he is telling people, don't go there to another world. Don't go there to communism. The best we can do is the world that we have. So that was the reason for marching into his class, and I was calling on students to wake up, to raise their sights to the need and possibility for another world. And I was challenging Timothy Snyder to debate the true facts and experience of communist revolution in the 20th century and the future and the present tense of building for that revolution, which needs to happen soon, not far off, based on this new communism. He evacuated the class. I said, let's debate here and now. Let's bring the students into it. All broke loose when I issued that challenge. And rather than being part of a debate that needed to happen right then and there, he evacuated the class.
Well, he also, I saw the video, we'll run some of it. He came, he put his hands on you, he grabbed the camera out of somebody's hands, and he called security on you, you know, hiding behind calling the security and not willing to measure facts against facts and marshal his argument against yours and let people sort it out and see where the truth lands. But despite his hustling people out of there and calling security, a few students stayed back. They were intrigued. They were provoked by what you did. Can you describe some of the engagement that broke out?
Yeah, I do want to say that his shutting this down was very symbolic and emblematic of precisely what the mission of Timothy Snyder is with these anti-communist distortions and lies. And that is to shut down any serious debate. With these students who stayed behind, well, we got into some of the historical experience of the first revolutions, you know, that took place, the socialist revolution in the Soviet Union, 1917 to 1956. And one of the things that I got into was this theory of totalitarianism. And this is what Snyder propounds. And it is a bull theory that communism and fascism, that the Soviet Union, the socialist Soviet Union in the 1920s and 30s and early 40s, and Nazi Germany were the same. And what we got into was, well, okay, let's look at the actual evidence. Let's look at the actual history. You know, the Soviet Union under Lenin and Stalin, these first two decades of the Soviet experience, you know, we saw incredible attempts to build a radically different kind of society, to eradicate the oppression of women, to go to work on eradicating, you know, the oppression and the discrimination against minority nationalities and ethnic groups. And it was a radically different society than has ever existed in the world. It was the first attempt. It had all kinds of problems and challenges before it, but something new was being attempted. Nazi Germany, on the other hand, was a society based on male supremacy, racial purity, you know, capitalist exploitation, fanatical chauvinism, and an incredible, you know, vicious genocidal conquest. In fact, in terms of showing the difference and how this theory of totalitarianism, you know, you just take the example of the plight and the condition of Jews, that in Nazi Germany, Jews were being rounded up. They were being persecuted. They were being terrorized. They were being exterminated at 6 million. But in the Soviet Union, in those parts of the Soviet Union not occupied by the Nazis, 1.5 million Jewish lives were saved. So we get into some of this actual history. And, you know, and the important point here, and this is what we really, you know, sort of have to bring forth in this great debate that I'm opening up, is that there is this historical experience. Bob Avakian went to work on analyzing what were the great achievements of these first revolutions in the Soviet Union, 1917 to 56, in China, 1949 to 76. What were their great achievements, which were overwhelmingly the defining feature of these revolutions? But what were their problems and shortcomings? And how can we do far better in making revolution in today's world? And that's what Bob Avakian has done through probing that experience, through analyzing it, you know, not holding anything back, looking at all the facts, taking on, not just to rhetorically answer, but to actually look into the charges that have been leveled against communism. You know, he's gone into this deeply, and he has brought forth a new communism, a new framework for human emancipation, for making revolution in today's world, based on actually summing up that experience is overwhelmingly positive dimension, but some serious problems and shortcomings. And we now have the basis, the framework to actually make a truly liberatory revolution in today's world.
Yeah, I think this last point you're making is so profoundly important, because it's always important to set the record straight about historical fact, about the truth. The truth matters. What the evidence shows, it matters to be grounded in that, especially about things that really have of great historical importance for the future. But I think what you're bringing in here is not only does Timothy Snyder lie about and distort and slander the actual history of communism, and not only is he a major public hitman, a heavy hitter for this anti-communist brainwash, but he is doing it explicitly in the service of keeping people locked within this existing system of capitalism imperialism. So it's dishonest methods in the service of a very oppressive system being held together. And in contrast, what you're describing with what BA has done is to go deeply into the actual history, the incredible accomplishments, but also, yes, the shortcomings and the errors honestly interrogate them in the service of breaking free of this nightmare world of capitalism, imperialism, and advancing down the road to real human emancipation through a new communist revolution, which is what you're fighting to bring alive. So I think the stakes of this could not be higher. It's not just as important as it is a matter of setting the record straight. It's a matter, like you said, of the future and of now. And I think it'd be important for you to speak before we close out to what is your mission and what's your call to others about going forward with this campaign you're on?
Well, I mean, this is the situation that we're facing, that, you know, you have people, enlightened, progressive, you know, people concerned about the state of the world who are influenced by this summation, this characterization, this bullshit that communism is a nightmare. And it's a millstone around people's necks. It really weighs on people. And this is something that keeps people from conceiving of a world beyond capitalism. I am opening up the debate about the past of communist revolution and the future of communist revolution and the real basis and possibility to make revolution in today's world, not as a far off hope and utopian dream, but as something that is actually possible. There is a framework, there is a strategy that has been put forth by Bob Avakian. But you know what? What I'm getting at and what we've been talking about together is the oxygen has been sucked out of the room. You know, the intellectual atmosphere in this society is very, very stultifying because precisely the alternative, the only alternative, the liberatory, emancipatory alternative to capitalism, imperialism. And let's look at the stakes right now. We are talking about a climate crisis careening towards catastrophe. We are talking about the real danger of nuclear war between the imperialist powers. We are talking about Gaza and genocide that's perpetrated by U.S. imperialism backing and propping up and giving diplomatic cover to Israel. Something, by the way, that Timothy Snyder will not condemn. This is the situation. These are the stakes. Which way for humanity? Is there going to be a future for this planet? There is a revolutionary way out. I am opening up the debate, restoring and bringing oxygen into the room so that we can get at this and bring forward revolutionary-minded people right here and now. I am inviting people to invite me to come to their classes, to come to their universities. You know, for me, if there's a Timothy Snyder on your campus, I'm eager and ready to debate him or her or they. I am ready to do it, okay? If there are classes that are teaching, you know, the history of socialist revolution, bring me in and I will get at the truth of these revolutions and the new communism, what it has summed up about the strengths and the weaknesses and the whole new framework Bob Avakian has brought forward in the work that he's done to make revolution, truly emancipatory revolution, possible. There are student groups that want to have me come. I'm ready. My message is there is an urgent situation confronting humanity. We talk about it on the RNL show. There'll be, you know, discussion, you know, in other segments tonight that bear on all of this. I am coming in. I'm going straight into the maw of this summation about communism that has lowered people's sights and that we have to bust open right now. Bring me to your campus before the end of the semester and let's join together in changing this atmosphere as part of accelerating the development of the movement for a real revolution.
All right, Raymond Lada, I want to thank you so much for what you're doing, getting out there, taking on this anti-communist brainwash and bringing forward and fighting for the new communist revolution that we need. People need to answer your call. Everybody watching, bring Raymond where you are. Join with him in this campaign. I also want to point you to resources at revcom.us, and in particular, the really wealth of work that Bob Avakian has done contrasting
fascism and communism, taking on this lie of totalitarianism that Raymond was speaking about, getting into the new communism. If you go to the Bob Avakian resource page, his publications, you'll find the work Breakthroughs that breaks down what he's actually further developed, the breakthroughs of the new communism. There are other resources at revcom.us. Raymond Lotta did an incredible interview setting the record straight on the history of communist revolutions and on their future that you can find there. Really important to dig into these works yourself, to spread them. Also, Raymond, you took, there's a number of pieces you did, and Bob Avakian has done, taking on the work of Timothy Snyder in particular on this question and a number of other dimensions. So again, wealth of information. I want to drive people to revcom.us on all of this. And Raymond, once again, thank you so much for making the time to come and talk with us here at the Revolution Nothing Less show.
Well, thanks for having me, and I look forward to coming back and reporting on campus initiative to break this debate wide open.
Great.
Once again, let me remind you that you are listening to The Michael Slate Show.
At the beginning of the show, Sansar and I talked about this proclamation, we need and we demand a whole new way to live, a fundamentally different system. And in this proclamation, it says that with the urgency the situation requires, we declare and demand the existing capitalist imperialist system and its institutions of government in this country must be abolished and dismantled and replaced by a new socialist system based on the Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America. So in the interviews that were done with Bob Avakian on this show, Sansara asked Bob Avakian about this Constitution. Let's watch.
You've mentioned, and it's come up a number of times already, the Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America that you authored. And we wanted to ask, first of all, it's an amazing document, and there's never been anything like this before, especially at all, but especially before the seizure of power. Why did you feel it was important to write it? And is there anything that you had in mind, any particular problems or questions you had in mind when you were writing it that you would suggest for people who are newly reading it that they also think about as they're reading it, or people returning to it?
Well, you know, I just did it because I didn't have anything else to do. No, I mean, look, you know, there's a need for people to have a clear sense, a concrete sense, as well as a, you know, a lofty vision of what it is we're aiming for. You know, sometimes the critics say, oh, you know, you're always complaining about what you don't like. You don't like this. You don't like that. You don't like it. But you never can say what you're for. Well, you know, here it is, concretized what we're for. I mean, first of all, even before this Constitution was written, we were very clear what we were for in broad strokes and, in, you know, in basic terms. But I felt there was a need, you know, coming off of summing up a lot of experience of previous, you know, socialist society in China and the Soviet Union before it, before, you know, the revolutions there were overturned and capitalism was restored in the Soviet Union in the 1950s and in China in the 1970s. In summing up this, I felt there was a need to make another leap in terms of what's, you know, the, you know, we're talking about socialist state power. What socialist state power and the socialist society that it was, you know, bringing the basis for and reinforcing, what should that society actually look like in as living a way as possible so that people could get a concrete sense? And also so we'd have a guideline. You know, what do you do after you make a revolution? What do you do on day one, people often raise? Well, this is a, you know, look, in the actual event of a successful revolution, there'll be a lot of new questions that'll get thrown up. Some things may turn out to be different than the way they're, you know, in some particulars of that Constitution. But it does lay out the basic principles and a lot of very concrete guidelines and institutional, you know, procedures and institutional or you know, organizations that could actually guide people on how to begin the day after seizing power, so to speak, and actually transforming society in a way that would be emancipating. So that was, you know, why I recognized the need for that. And I did have certain questions in mind. I did a lot of study of, you know, I've been wrestling with this question for several years, like, what should be the character? You know, we can learn from China, we can learn from the Soviet Union, but we can also see certain shortcomings. What should be the character of the actual system, of the actual state power, of the actual institutions, from the political, governmental institutions to the culture, to the educational system, and so on? What should be their actual character? What can we learn from past experience? Where can we see that things need to be done differently and better? So that was a sort of a general concern. I did, you know, I did a lot of reading. I studied, you know, I looked into the constitutions of the Soviet Union, particularly from the 1930s. I went back and looked at the Chinese constitutions during the Cultural Revolution in the 60s and 70s. I went and I read the Magna Carta. I read the, you know, the rights of the French document, the rights of man. You know, I read the U.S. Constitution again to, you know, to try to get a sense of the contradictions that they were dealing with, even though that was a different system, as well as the constitutions that were actually socialist constitutions. And there is, as I point out in the book, The New Communism, there is one, you know, essential and basic contradiction that I felt was important to speak to and to lay the basis for dealing with in a somewhat different way than it had been done in the history of socialist societies previously. And that is the contradiction that we can scientifically determine that communism, the achievement of communism and the revolution that's necessary for that, is objectively in the interest of the broad masses of people of the world, the overwhelming majority of humanity. But, and we can learn this from the experience of previous socialist societies, at any given time, not everybody in whose interest that revolution is wanted at any given time. And yet, that's one problem. And yet at the same time, it would be absolutely criminal to make a revolution and then hand power back to the people you just overthrew and let them subject the masses of people to all the horrors that you just made a revolution to do away with. And besides that sort of obvious thing, there's also the question that, you know, at a given point, what if a significant section of the masses has become, you know, disoriented, you know, has felt that the revolution is not really doing what they want it to do and so on, and they're sort of open to being persuaded, you know, in some subtle or even overt ways to go back to the old system. And then you have the problem, okay, it took us however many decades to actually overthrow the system. Now we're going to just let people, you know, take us back to the old system and we have to start all over again. No. So how do you handle this contradiction that this is in the objective interest of the masses of people, but not all of them want it at any given time? Well, you cannot handle this correctly, and it's not going to lead to a good result if you, in effect, put guns in the backs of the masses and try to force march them to communism because, quote unquote, it's in your interests. So what this Constitution is doing is providing the institutionalized means where, yes, if, say, 90% of the people wanted to go back to capitalism, they could, through the institutions of this system and in its electoral processes, actually effect that. But it would take an overwhelming majority of people to do that. Meanwhile, the institutional basis provides the means for continuing on the road of socialism without having to put guns at the back of the masses, including those who become disaffected temporarily. You know, it's like a hangover. You know, masses of people get swayed. We want to go back to capitalism. And then they wake up and they say, man, I got a f-ing hangover. I forgot what this f-ing capitalism was like. What the f- was I thinking of, you know? So this is a way of, like, not having that determine things. So that the way the electoral processes are set up, you know, it does serve to reinforce the existing system while allowing the masses to have a lot of sway in determining who their leader, a lot of voice in terms of who their actual leaders are. And it even allows for the possibility that people could vote to go back to capitalism if there were an overwhelming, overwhelming majority. But it provides the institutional means so that people don't suffer from that kind of hangover. So that, but on the other hand, you're not force marching them to communism with guns at their back. So they, you know, they're, you know, some of these anarchists and others say, well, you know, this is all a sham. You know, you, to use the old saying, you giveth with one hand and taketh away with the other. You know, you pretend, you let the people vote, but you stack the voting so it goes the way you want it to. Well, yes. I mean, the point is that there is no, as long as you have a society divided into different classes, into, you know, oppressive social relations that you're still striving to overcome, there's no such thing as pure democracy. You know, they always talk about free and fair elections. They called the election in Iraq when they were occupying the country with their own military a free and fair election. But even when you're not, don't have guns at your back, or the, you know, police aren't coming your door and dragging you out and telling you how to vote, you're being influenced by all the institutions of society and by the underlying operation of the economic system and the prevailing social relations. You're being influenced that the only reasonable thing to do is to vote to reinforce the system. That's what happens under capitalism when people go vote. You know, it even gets to ridiculous dimensions. I saw, you know, that, well, anyway, Bill Maher, I saw him on TV, and you know, I was going to say that, but, you know, he has one or two points, but he's mainly just really, you know, having a bad influence. And he's trying to convince people that Mike Pence is not so bad because the alternative is Donald Trump. And he goes into this whole thing about, when you take an SAT test, at least when I took it, they used to ask you a question. They say, choose the best option out of this set of questions. And then he used that to say, you see, what the way these reformists always talk, we can't make the perfect the enemy of the good. Therefore, we have to choose the least bad alternative. Well, Pence may be this and that. He's a Christian fundamentalist, blah, blah, blah. But he's not trying to pull off a coup. And, you know, he's trying to use the mechanisms of the system to institute a fascist theocracy, okay? And it, wow, I say, Bill Maher, talk about a poverty of imagination and the lowered sights and limits of what you see as possible, that you're posing to people the choice between Donald Trump and Mike Pence. But the fact is, there's a certain logic to what Bill Maher is saying there. You got to work within the reality of the system as it is. You got to make the choices. Yeah, okay, you know, you could vote for some radical, but it's not going to get any votes. It's not going to mean anything. You're just going to take votes away from the good Democrat, or maybe from Mike Pence. But this is, you know, this is what happens under this system. There's no such thing as a free and fair election, you know, in the sense of being free of the influence of the dominant relations and institutions in the society. And yes, in this Constitution, that's also true. But it, at the same time, in order to avoid this whole thing of you know, force marching to people to communism with guns at their back, it is institutionalizing the means for a tremendous amount of dissent, like I said, cultural, intellectual ferment, so the masses can thrash out a lot of questions without losing the whole thing and then waking up the day after and say, what the f*** were we doing? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, think of everything, all the reasons why people tell us this revolution will never happen. Are they pointing at nothing real? Of course not. They're pointing at very real things. The power of this system in terms of its armed force and its power in terms of molding people's thinking. You know, so, you know, it's very, very difficult to actually make a revolution. That's why people say to us, you'll never happen. It's too much going against it. It's too powerful. Too many people are f***ed up. People are not thinking that way. The middle class is too big, and so on and so forth. Well, all that's real, and all that has to be overcome. And imagine you overcome all that, and then you encounter problems with building a new economy. You encounter problems in working out the, you know, the non-oppressive relations among different sections of the people. And people become disaffected, and they forgot what it was like being under capitalism. And they want to temporarily go back. And then a week later, they say, could you revolutionaries please come around again and start organizing us to get back to the other system we had, which we forgot was much better? So this is why it's institutionalized that there are processes for people to actually choose their leaders to a very significant extent, but within a definite framework. And there are institutionalized means and provisions and encouragement of and for dissent and cultural and intellectual ferment, but within a certain framework, just as democracy is practiced within a certain framework, a very different framework within this society and this system. I would say the central problem, that a historical problem of the communist revolution that it's speaking to and providing the institutional means to deal with, is this contradiction that this revolution and advance to communism in the world is in the fundamental interest of the masses of people, but not all the people want it all the time. But you can't solve that by force marching people to, you know, on that road with guns at their back. So this is the institutional means for resolving that contradiction in a way that doesn't require you or force you to do that, but actually corresponds to what are the fundamental interests of the masses of people, which is why they would have risen up under your leadership to make a revolution in the first place.
So that was Bob Avakian taking us very deeply into the heart of the breakthroughs that's concentrated in this constitution that we've been talking about, the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America. And I just see, you know, you see in that the product of decades of work of wrangling with the biggest problems we face in making revolution, summing up from the first stage of communist revolution and then what's really at the heart of the new communism. And the whole of that is what you get inside of and introduced to in when you watch these interviews in full. There were three parts, several hours each, and they take you into what the work that BA has done, and then all of who this person is. You get to meet this leader. And I know, you know, just on this question we've been hammering at on the need to raise people's sights, I think part of the problem we face is there's all the degradation that comes from this system, all the ways people are pitted against each other. And when you watch these interviews, in contrast to that, you get inside of and you meet this leader that really is about the human emancipation that's possible, the kind of struggle, the kind of revolution, the kind of process needed to achieve that human emancipation, and who we need to be in fighting for that. So people should watch these interviews. If you've watched them, watch them again. And key in changing people's thinking right now with the urgency required is a mass spreading of these interviews and of Bob Avakian's social media, where you get a sense in a much more distilled way why we need a revolution and how that's possible. It's very inspiring to hear what we just heard, and that's just a piece of the interviews in full.
Yeah, BA's social media is at Bob Avakian Official, and he's coming out with new pieces. He's on every social media platform, new pieces every week, often more than once a week, and especially numbers 1 through 11, listen to them in sequence. You get a full sense of why we need a revolution, what this system is that rules over us. Who is Bob Avakian to talk about all these things anyhow? The rare moment we're in when revolution could actually be made. He goes deeply into the system and what it's doing in Palestine. It's a profound follow, listen, spread, very important and foundational to this revolution. We want to take just a few minutes on International Women's Day before we close out today's program. It is a revolutionary holiday, March 8th, celebrated all over the world for 100 years and more. It's a communist revolutionary holiday about breaking all the chains on women and unleashing the fury of women as a mighty force for revolution. And we want to give a shout out to the women who are rising up in the streets all over the world. Mexico City had just massive outpourings, 180,000 women. Women all over Latin America, Africa, Europe, all over the world. We want to give a special shout out as well to the women of Iran, who rose up so bravely 2 years ago against the morality police and their killing of Mahsa Jina Amini for allegedly not wearing her mandatory hijab headscarf properly. And just the unbridled fury of millions of women and then joined by men and people of all genders and all backgrounds in that country against the hatred and misogyny and the oppression of women there and against all the nightmare that is wrought by the Islamic Republic there against masses of people. And within this, we want to recognize the thousands of people who are arrested and tortured and brutally
repressed for that uprising, the political prisoners there who are standing strong, and a special shout out and recognition to our comrades in Iran who are in extremely difficult circumstances there, fighting to apply the new communism that Bob Avakian has forged to that situation so that that fury can be called forth once again and fused with the scientific understanding and strategy so that it can be part of bringing that republic down, that Islamic republic down, and establishing a liberating new society as part of the world process of emancipating humanity. That is incredibly inspiring what they are doing there. And like I said, a special shout out.
Yeah. And then we want to show you some clips from the International Women's Day that took place here. The protests and gatherings and dancing happened across the country. But we're going to play a clip from the speech that you gave on the back of a pickup truck in Venice Beach, California.
Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader that we RevComs proudly follow. The architect of a whole new framework for human emancipation, what we call the new communism, has put it this way. He says, even with all the ways that the heavy chains of hundreds and thousands of years of oppressive tradition weigh down on masses of people and place a heavy burden, particularly on the half of humanity that is female, there is a deep yearning to be free of all this. This not only leads to imaginary hopes of supernatural salvation, but also erupts in unrestrained fury right here in this real world. And that fury needs to be called forth. It needs to be given scientific, revolutionary expression. It needs to be focused towards the emancipation of all of humanity. This fury needs to be directed to fighting against the fundamental source of all this suffering. This system of capitalism imperialism with its suffocating and brutal patriarchal male supremacy, along with all its other outrages. And this takes on even more powerful meaning and urgent importance in the current situation in this country and others, where the forceful assertion of raw misogyny, that is the hatred of women, and the patriarchal subjugation of women is becoming more blatant and more unbridled, focused to a significant degree now in the escalating moves to further deny women control over their own lives and their very bodies, being brought under with the right to abortion and even birth control, brought under mounting attack. Right now, this slogan and call needs to be taken up broadly and made a powerful material force. Break the chains. Unleash the fury of women as a mighty force for revolution. Say it, break the chains.
Break the chains.
Unleash the fury of women.
Unleash the fury of women.
As a mighty force for revolution.
As a mighty force for revolution.
And since B.A., Bob Avakian spoke those words in 2021, the Supreme Court has succeeded in ripping away women's right to abortion. They have told women, and backed it up by law, that their hopes, their desires, their plans for their lives, their accomplishments, their safety, even their very lives, counts for nothing. Counts for nothing because all they are is baby-making machines. And let me be clear, forcing women to have children against their will is a form of enslavement. And this is what is going on now in 22 states already that have banned abortion and many more on the way. Now, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, the overturning of women's right to abortion, came as a shock to millions across this country. But it was not a shock to the Democratic Party. It was clear that this is coming. And I will say personally that I personally have been fighting the attacks on abortion for 30 years. 30 years since I was a teenager and these fascists first started bombing abortion clinics and terrorizing and murdering abortion doctors. Yeah. It was clear that they were going for the overturn of Roe. This was not a surprise. But this entire time, the Democratic Party did what? They compromised. They conciliated. They sought common ground with these fascists. They demobilized women and kept them out of the streets. And they said, vote for us, vote for us, vote for us. And even when Democrats won, women lost. And the right to abortion was chipped away. And then, when Roe v. Wade was directly under fire when the Supreme Court took up the case that eventually overturned it, and it was obvious what was happening, I spearheaded the movement Rise Up for Abortion Rights. And we led tens of thousands into the streets to fight against this. Many of you were with us. And we said, hell no. And at that time, where were these Democrats? Not only were they not on the front lines, they were behind the scenes scheming to keep women off the streets, and some of them were outright attacking and sabotaging those of us leading people to stand up. And now today, they have the gall, Biden and the Democrats have the gall to come once again and posture and pose as champions of women, telling you to vote for them. No, not this time. Don't get played again. We need to channel our fury not into the BEB, the bourgeois electoral bull that got us into this mess. We need to break it out in the streets, unleash the fury of women as a mighty force for revolution. And that is what we are doing here today. That's what all of you are part of. And that is what the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity is doing every day. And that's why you need to join it.
And that brings us to the end of another show here at the Michael Slate Show. I'd like to thank Andy Z and everybody at the Revolution Nothing Less Show, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and all of you for tuning in. And again, check out the RevComs on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRevComs and follow at Bob Avakian Official on all your social media platforms. And remember, the problem is not human nature, it is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. My name is Sansara Taylor. I'll talk to you again next week.
Troubled time.